Business success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Join RVK for the award-winning RV on Business show every Tuesday at 12 midday. It's not about thinking out of the box. There is no box. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome to 101.9 High FM, 10 minutes past 12. Thank you so much for joining us here today. Today, we are waiting for our guest, Wayne McCurry, who's going to join us shortly. And really what I want to do is take a quick tour around the world and discuss with Wayne how different political events, how different social events are impacting on the world economy and therefore on the prices of certain things like property, commodities, more specifically things like gold, and how that affects us here in South Africa. We know that at the moment there's a war going on between Russia and Ukraine. It's been going on for a while now, and I think the market's factored that in. But have things changed with China starting to rear its head? We look to America, to the other side of the world. We see an election looming. It was a slam dunk decision as to how it was going to come out. Pretty straightforward, until we had a major change on the chessboard. And Kamala Harris has now put up a hand and is now running. And all of a sudden, the Democrats seem to be back in the race. How does that look for the world economy, and how are markets going to take that? If we come back here to South Africa, we have got a government of national unity, something that, from my observation of having been in the country now for just over a week, and I'm broadcasting now from the Discovery head office in Sandton, everybody I speak to is upbeat. Everybody I speak to is very, very positive, very excited about the opportunity, and really just giving political scenario time to settle, for everybody to find their feet and to see how that works out. But there's definitely a sense of optimism in the air. If we go a little bit further north and we look into Mozambique, a company that's had a tumultuous past, a country that was on the brink of being one of the poorest countries in the world, seemed to pull itself back and is now engaged and involved in a civil strife and civil war. It is a religious challenge that they're having over there. How's that going to affect us? How's that going to affect coal exports? Those are the things that I'd like to discuss. And then, of course, on High FM, the war that is on everybody's mind is the war between Israel and Hamas, and the looming war between Israel and Hezbollah on the northern border, which hopefully we'll be able to prevent. It doesn't look likely at the moment. How is that going to impact on the world, and how is that going to change the scenario? We know that every time Israel has had a major war, in 67 and 73, in Lebanon, the first and the second Lebanese war, there was an impact on the world oil price, there was an impact on the world oil supply, but that game has changed. OPEC is no longer what it was, for better or for worse. Oil supply is now more universally around the world. We've got major producers in Russia, in Venezuela, and we've got other countries who can come to the fore. We've got countries moving away from fossil fuel in a tremendous way. If we look at China, the massive solar fields that they are building, and we look at countries like the UK that have given the centre of London another 2 or 3 years to be free of any combustion vehicles. And by the year 2030, I think, they will not register any more combustion vehicles for residential private use. So definitely a great move on that front. But power has to come from somewhere. And where is that going to come from? If we just look here in South Africa, one thing we know for certain is that we can generate power with coal. We can generate it with diesel. We can generate it with nuclear power. And we can generate it with renewable energy, things like solar and wind. So there's many, many options that come into play. And those are the things that we need to look at in order to look at the bigger picture. Wayne has still not joined us. I have messaged him and I did confirm with him this morning. But in the meantime, let us continue with some of your questions that you had that I was going to put on hold until next week, because I thought this was an important matter just to discuss with Wayne, and he was available this week to discuss it. I'm just want to get back to the questions. We discussed life cover in detail, and we discussed retirement savings in detail. What I want to discuss now is income replacement benefits or income continuation options. There's different names at different companies. And here I've got a plethora of questions. So let me read through some of the questions as they've come in, and you'll see that they all seem to center around the same misunderstanding, and we'll go from there. So Jeremy wants to know, I have income continuation benefit at a company. He mentions a name, but I'm going to decline to say that. And what I found is that the cover now is more than I actually earn. Will I be paid out? So that's question one. Spoo wants to know, question number two, I've got income protection cover that I've had for 12 years. I'm now at a company that is offering income protection on the disability at work. I don't have a choice. I have to take it. What are your feelings? Number three comes from an anonymous, a person who wants to know to say that my work has a sliding scale income disability benefit. And I've been told that I can gap the shortfall on the sliding scale privately. Is that true? And then there are many questions that come in after that, which we'll get to. But let's answer these three by maybe just painting a bigger scenario so that we can understand the playing fields and how it works. First and foremost, one needs to understand what the premise and the basis of insurance is. It is to put you in the position that you were prior to an event happening. So you had a cell phone, as an example, the cell phone got stolen, or the cell phone was smashed and can no longer be repaired. You now want a cell phone that is similar or same to the one you have so that your life can continue. Your intention is not to get a better cell phone and not to get something that is antiquated. So you really just want to be put in the position that you were prior to it. Same thing with income protection. You want to make sure that if you are unable to earn an income, either as a self-employed person and you are unable to work for whatever the reason, or an employed person and your time off work is longer than the company will allow for you to keep your job, so to speak, you want to make sure that you can convalesce, get better, and be able to continue on your way with an income coming in. Having said that, one cannot be put in a better position than they were prior to the event happening. So therefore, it goes without saying that one can only be insured up to the income amount that you earn. It's slightly different for a self-employed person and an employed person, and the reason is pretty straightforward. An employed person knows what their gross salary is, or was their cost to company. And they also know what their net salary is after deductions. And the deductions that we're looking for here are tax. That's the main deduction. Because if you are at a company which has a pension and a provident fund, and they have medical aid scheme where they pay for your medical aid, you want to be able to receive money that will either allow you to pay those contributions should you no longer be employed. So therefore, you can continue to get the same net income plus the benefits. Or if you're self-employed, you can look at the amount that you are earning and you can say, this is what I want to be able to draw out going forward. So the way it works is that you can only be insured once. So to answer Smoo's question, if you've had a benefit at a private insurance company, be it Sunrun, Momentum, Liberty, Discovery, and you've had it for a long time, and now your company is forcing you to take it, unfortunately, you do need to go back to the private company and say, this is what I have at my company. How can I reduce my benefit in order to make sure that I'm not doubly insured? Because practically, you can be doubly insured, but you won't be paid out, because you only get paid out once. So if it's a two private companies, the rule usually is those who insured you first will pay, And if it's between a private company and a corporate, it's the corporate that's going to pay and the private company won't pay. And you can shout and scream and throw your toys, but those are the rules. The fact that you paid the premium means that you were misinformed, and ignorance is no excuse. So that's the way it works. And even though you've had a policy for 12 years, and now I'm assuming maybe you might be uninsurable, which means you can't get the benefit anymore. One needs to be careful about it, discuss it, and maybe even go back to your HR and say, "This is my scenario. How can we sort it out?" Let's take a quick break. It is 20 past 12. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to the show. And to continue answering the question, is Anonymous asked the question just before the break about the scenario where you've been given advice about gapping the shortfall on what you have at work and what you have privately. So those of you who don't work for a corporate, don't worry about it. And those of you who do work for a corporate and your income protection covers 100% of your net salary, you don't have to worry either. But many companies say the insurable amount is a percentage of your salary. So 80%, 70%, 60%. And the reason they give that choice to people is because then the contributions to risk cover, life, disability, severe illness, and funeral will be lower if you choose a lower percentage. And so will the amount that you put away towards your retirement. But that means that if you finish your calculation and you're earning net, let's say 100,000 rand a month, you might only be insuring 70, which means that you have the ability to go and insure that 30,000 rand privately. Question is, should you do it? And again, my typical answer, it depends. One needs to look at the scenario of the individual. But I would strongly advise you to look at the scenario because here are some advantages of having it privately. Number one, when you have it privately, you don't have a prescribed waiting period that you would have on a corporate. On a corporate, everybody has the same waiting period, and often it's 3 months. Here you can have a 1 month corporate waiting period or even a 7 day waiting period, depending on your occupation or your income. The other thing you can do is you can have an increase of your choice. You can have an increase that increases yearly by inflation or faster than inflation. So again, that's entirely up to you where it may be prescribed at the corporate as to what it will be. And on that, I'm sorry, the most important benefit is that most corporate benefits expire. In other words, they'll only cover you up to a certain age, it's either 63 or 65, and in the rare case, it's beyond that, maybe to age 70. Today, you can buy income continuation benefits all the way to what we call whole of life. In other words, so long as you are alive and you are still around, you are able to claim. The policies do taper sometimes. They do change towards the end of one's lifespan after the age 70. So you just need to be aware of that fine print. But it's definitely a giant leap compared to where benefits were many, many years ago. The next question comes in from somebody puts a name at the back at the bottom as concerned citizen in Pretoria. This client says, "I have a policy at Momentum. It's not an income replacement. It's called a functional protector. Apparently, this is slightly different. I've tried to increase it, but they won't. How does this work?" So again, I'm not qualified to give advice on Momentum products. I haven't sold them for many, many years, but I am aware of this particular product simply because I had one myself. And my understanding, and I stand corrected, so please call your financial advisor at Momentum and double check this, is that this benefit isn't there to replace your income. You've insured an amount. So at the moment, I think the maximum amount is 36,000 rand per month. And it is a benefit that pays out on total and permanent disability. So if you are totally and permanently disabled, or you have a severe illness that is qualifies for 100% payout, this benefit will pay indefinitely. So it'll pay you monthly at that amount for the rest of your life, and it doesn't expire. So it's a limited amount. It is relatively cheap compared to income replacement. And those are that's the way that policy works. So please just concerned in Pretoria, please just chat to your financial advisor and just check what that is. I know I have one. I've had one for many years, and I'm certainly not cancelling it because at the price, it's really cost effective. The next question is coming, which is also quite fascinating. Somebody wants to know, I have income replacement. Sorry, my mistake. I didn't finish answering the first question, where the person says that the income replacement is now worth more than their salary. Well, how does that work? Very simple. You insure yourself in year one for 100% of your net salary. In year two, that policy increases automatically. But when you go to your boss and you sit down and you have a meeting, you've got the puppy dog eyes to tell you that the company's not doing well, and the director's flight to Mauritius was really a business trip or a holiday trip, and they're trying to do their best that they can, and they only need to buy new cars because of tax, etc., etc. In other words, you're not getting a raise. And this goes on year after year after year. So after 3 or 4 years, you've had no raise, but your policy has increased year on year on year. And now there's a major disconnect between what you insured for and what you earn. The first worry you have is, am I going to get paid? Second worry you have is, what happens if my health has changed and I can't buy up more cover should I need to, either if I change jobs or I go work for myself, or all of a sudden I get this magical raise? What do I do? So the first thing is that if you are totally and permanently disabled and a company is looking to pay you indefinitely going forward, the first thing they're going to ask you for is your last IRP fives, last two. And based on that, they're going to work out the claim. So if you've been overinsured, you can't turn around to them and say, but I paid for a higher cover. It doesn't work that way. You can only pay for the cover that you're entitled to, which is the income that you earn. So it is important to keep it in the risk that you might get a raise, and therefore your cover will now be less than your income, is something that you need to manage. So if you skipped a raise for 1 year, but hopefully you'll get it on the second year, then maybe keep it and the two will, be equal thereafter. But if you are paying significantly more than you are going to be paid out, please reconsider it, relook at it, because that money can be allocated elsewhere, can be better used and can be used in retirement planning, which is something that often is the balancing act that many people have to do. I need money to cover myself now, should I become disabled? I need money to cover myself, my family, should I die? But at the same time, I need to put away as much as I can for retirement because that's just the way it works. So it becomes very tricky. So to overpay premium that really isn't worthwhile is something that I would really look at and be careful about. The next question that's coming is about PPS and asking about how the share incentive works, how the profit share works. I'm not going to answer the question because I'm certainly not qualified to do it on a PPS product. All I do want to say is that if you are a member of PPS, PPS stands for Professional Provident Society. It is cover that can only be taken out, a bit more lenient now, but it was originally started off to cover professionals. So they kept their insured pool very distinctive, and therefore they were able to measure risk and give really good cover. They do have benefits that are unique to them. So if you are under pressure from a person to switch a PPS income replacement policy or income protection policy, please make sure you understand all the parameters. The one thing I do want to make you aware of is that if you've got money that's due to you, that's accumulated, that will pay out at retirement, There are ways where you can keep that benefit intact and take advantage of what other companies are having to offer you. But once again, you need to do your homework. This is where the rule that I often quote comes into play, that life insurance is 80% common sense and 20% experience and knowledge. Make sure that it makes sense. If someone's promised you something that's too good to be true, if the premium all of a sudden drops so drastically for the same cover, it's not the same thing. The country that we are doing the product in, that we are promoting the product in, is the same company, same mortality rates, same mortality tables. Companies vary, but if there is a huge discrepancy, then you need to see, ask yourself a question: what am I losing out on, and what are the benefits to it? The next question comes in from somebody who calls himself Mr. Senior. Mr. Senior wants to know, what happened to term policies? I don't see them anymore, and I'm unable to get them. Mr. Senior, that's a good question. First of all, let me explain what a term policy is. Life insurance, we know you take out, pay your premium, just plain life cover, and if you, when you pass away, it pays out the amount that you insured for. Simple. Two major areas that won't pay is usually suicide within the first 24 months, and the second one is self-inflicted. Some companies might be sticky about that. Or when one travels to an area where they shouldn't travel to, according to the South African travel law. But that's basically what life insurance is. Term insurance is life insurance that's taken out, but it's only underwritten for a certain period of time. It's usually periods of 5 years, so 5 years, 10 years, 15, and 20 years. Question might be, well, why on earth would I want to do that? In South Africa, term insurance is very popular in business agreements. So if you are a director of a building company and you are joining forces with an architectural company and a personal private equity company to build an office block and over the next 36 to 48 months, you all might take out life insurance for a five-year term to insure each other that should something happen, you're fully covered. And that's really the place for it. The other place might be a person who turns around and says, right, I've got three children between the age of 10 and 15. Therefore, by 15 years' time, my children should be off my payroll, so to speak. So I will take term insurance for 15 years, which is a lot cheaper, to cover them in anything, in event of anything happening to me so that they are fully covered. And I don't have to worry. But for my wife, on the other hand, I want to take out whole of life insurance so that she's covered regardless of when an event happens, because I want to make sure that certain things are in place. The question might be, well, why don't you just take out a whole of life and cancel it at certain times? And it all boils down to premium. Premium is a lot cheaper if it is in term insurance. And I've just seen something flash up on the screen from somebody that I know, somebody who lives in Israel, who said, who's just mentioned, says, "Hey, Avi, we've had this discussion about life insurance in Israel. And yes, thank you for that. We have signed your name, but I'm not going to mention it." To say that, if, for example, in Israel, one cannot get whole of life insurance. So if you had to do the exercise, take the person like myself who lives in Israel. I have life insurance here in South Africa, I have life insurance in Israel. Life insurance in Israel is significantly cheaper than it is over here, whether I take it into rands or I take it into dollars. But this is a caveat. It expires at age 70. How many of us know people who in their 60s, their late 60s, they're still active, they're still working, who are still engaged in commerce, who are still signing personal surety for loans and different things like that? That's why it is cheaper. It's cheaper because it's term. And therefore, one needs to just be cognizant of that before you make that decision. And again, there's no good and there's no bad. It's just what is the most appropriate and what is the most suitable for you. And that is what I would recommend you to go and have a look at and to go and do. And then again, so I haven't got to the previous questions, but they're popping up now. Does this mean that you can have life insurance in South Africa and not live there? Well, the answer is yes. First of all, always check with the life insurance company. Send them an email and get an answer in writing. Don't call and don't ask a broker. If you ask a broker, you want to see an email trail that you can keep on file that says that I have now immigrated, I live in the UK, I live here, I live there, and I want to make sure that if I keep on life insurance policy in South Africa, in the event of my death, it's going to pay out. One thing I do want to point out, if you work for a multinational company, Barlow International, one of the other big manufacturers, ArcelorMittal, and you work here in South Africa and you have your pension fund here in South Africa with life and disability, please make sure that if you get transferred to another country, that that benefit will pay out should you live and reside elsewhere. I know clients of mine have made sure that all their members who are on their South African benefit cancelled their benefit and moved it elsewhere in order to make sure that they were covered in the country that they live. We are unfortunately running out of time, and Craig says we need to go to the shops. So let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Fly FM. It's 20 minutes to one, and I'm sitting there laughing. Listen to that intro there from Nick Rabinowitz. I read his write-up in the Jewish Report this weekend with a big smile on my face. One thing we have as Jews, and predominantly as South Africans, is an ability to laugh at ourselves, ability to laugh at the idiosyncrasies of each of our cultures, of our subcultures, of the areas that we live in, of the cliques that we have as people. And Nick just has the Jews down pat. And you sit there looking at yourself through his lens, and it is absolutely hysterical. I don't know if it's appropriate during 3 weeks or not, but I think you can all do a bit of, with a bit of comic relief. And we can all do a bit of comic relief from within our own community. Nick is there for us when we need somebody of Nick's stature to be there for us at different events. And please go along and support him and just have a good laugh and walk out feeling really, really good about yourself and proud about being Jewish, because we just have the shoulders to laugh and to poke fun at ourselves. Okay. The last question that I want to answer, because we are running out of time, I just also want to wish Craig and the team a big mazel tov on the new studio. I was in there last week. It's still a work in progress, very much so, but it's your own home. I think for the first time in many years, you've got your own place that you can customize, that you can put your stamp on, and where everybody feels incredibly comfortable. And please God, you should have many happy hours broadcasting from there to Jews around the world and wherever you go. I'm going to finish off now, but I just want to finish off by saying that for me, it's always an honor and a privilege to be back in South Africa. It's always special to be back amongst the South African community. I was taking them a bit of a tour of Glen Hazel the other evening, and just showing new buildings that have gone up today, schools, the Torah Academy School, the Osamaf School, I don't know if I got that name correct, New Shul Bar Osamaf, and these buildings are just homes that house many, many happy, thriving community members across the spectrum of Jewish life. And it is incredible to see how, number one, how beautiful they look and how proud we can be of what we've created here in South Africa, or put it correctly, that you've created in South Africa, and how thriving the community is, that there's demand for more places of worship, there's demand for schooling and better schooling, the amount of kosher restaurants, the quality of the food. Is just an absolute accolade to the South African Jewish community. And also just to say to the South African Jewish community that we've been through an incredibly difficult time. with the International Court of Justice, going through elections, but coming out victorious on the other end with your dignity intact and allowing the democratic process to follow its true and natural way by being part of the solution and not being part of the problem. For the Chief Rabbi, for always giving clear and absolute crystal and well-advised guidance to the South African community, and to Kathy and the team for always making sure there's a voice of the Jewish community that is fair, that is level, and that does justice to the community and to Jews around the world. Craig, thanks so much for pushing the buttons once again. So our guest didn't join us. We will speak to you next week.